Baker Mayfield, undraftable, off my board.
The Cleveland Browns select Baker Mayfield.
What a beautiful throw by the Baker!
Victor! Hasta la vista, baby! Touchdown!
Welcome in to the OBR Film Breakdown, which is brought to you by our good friends at TickPick.com. Make sure you go there today to TickPick.com/breakdown, TickPick.com, to get that $10 off your first order by going to TickPick.com. Today, tomorrow, whenever you get your next Browns tickets, make sure you use them, get that $10 off. You won't find a better site to take advantage of the price you see at the beginning is the price you see at the end. You don't get those unnecessary, ridiculous fees, and they will match up to 110% of a difference if you find a cheaper ticket on another site. Take advantage of TickPick.com/breakdown. Get $10 off your first use. Okay, so we're going to shift. We're going to start a little reminder before we begin. Not a reminder, but maybe you didn't see it. Maybe you did. I'm kind of taking a step away from Twitter. As far as being readily available, got a 9-to-5 that I need to focus on a lot. And the toxicity in Browns Twitter is, from both sides is out of control. People going after each other personally, it's not a safe space, not a healthy space for a lot of people, and is doing me more detriment with anything that I put out than anything good. Like, I can post a couple great plays from Baker, post a couple bad plays, and people just from both sides come after me. It's not worth it anymore. I think you guys know to come find my opinion on the podcast. Going to continue to do this thing every day. Going to continue to be on the OBR all the time. So, you know, that's where you can find me. That's the place to find me. And I don't think Twitter, where I, you know, made my account private because I'm just tired of dealing with people. Sorry. Dealing with the negativity, the arguing to just argue. Just want to make sure that that's clear where you can find stuff. If you're so interested in, Measly Jake's opinion, you can find it there. Otherwise, I'm going to try to start every one of these with my thought of the day, something Browns related typically. The thought of today is something that keeps popping up as a means to the future of the Cleveland Browns. I don't know who needs to hear this, but you don't have to look at the Browns quarterbacks of the past or situations of the past and make a threat to the future. You know, the 1-31 and the terrible quarterbacks that the Browns have had in the past have no bearing on the future decisions that they will make. And if it's a means of, like, threatening people, well, it could be worse. Okay, well, I don't think this front office is going to make it worse, right? And I don't think that just because you've had a bunch of terrible decision makers and a terrible quarterback situation in the past means you have to settle for mediocrity in the current state of things. Like, you can have higher aspirations than that. And just because of failed regimes in the past and failed quarterbacks in the past doesn't have any bearing on the future. So that's a thought I need to get out there. Like, quit saying, well, I think Rich Eisen seems like a good enough dude, but stop saying it could be worse. Like, we know, we've seen it, man. We get it. We're not clamoring to cut Baker Mayfield. It's like, Baker might work out, he might not. We don't know yet, you know? We don't know yet. But quit trying to, like, threaten people who have, like, aspirations for better quarterback play. That's an okay thing to have by saying, well, you could have Charlie Fry or you could have Brady Quinn. Like, come on, man. That has no bearing on what you're hoping for with a roster that's pretty dang good and is struggling with quarterback play and has a huge decision to make there. Just, you don't need to do that. It just, you're just craving attention when you do that. That's what everybody is posting, like being grateful for Baker Mayfield because they've done, you know, he brought them from 1-3. No, there's a bunch of people that did that. And you're just giving the quarterback credit is the weirdest thing to me. Okay. Again, Baker could work out. He could not. I don't know. He's not playing well right now, but he's had some stretches of glimpse that have given us a glimpse of what he could be. You know, it could work out. I don't know. But quit trying to, like, claim that it's like the past has a bearing on the future here. It's just it's a weird thing you're doing for attention, in my opinion, to try to get people to support your cause or something. It's just strange. Strange. Anyway, we're going to talk real quick about the offense from this game, which was absolutely miserable. Their personnel, which I'm going to write up for the morning by lunchtime, The Browns personnel is crazy to me. It's all over the board. They have a very significant lead in 13 personnel, like a jarring lead on anybody else. I'm talking almost three times as many usages of snaps of 13 personnel. So in this game, you know, it was 11 personnel 28 times, 12 personnel 14 times, 13 personnel only 12 times, 21 personnel 5 times, 22 personnel 7 times. They ran motion on 33 of 66 snaps. That's pretty standard for them. But like, what was amazing to me looking at the data, when I look at Sports Info Solutions, who does a great job with this, the Browns have run 134 13 personnel snaps. That's by far the most in the NFL. The second highest is Tennessee with 55. That's a jarring number. They've thrown the ball. Again, let's just look at this. And again, I'm going to have it written up at the OBR. But if I'm looking at just the throwing data from the Browns compared to, you know, the second highest team or whatever, if you look at throwing data, the Browns sit 48 pass attempts out of 13 personnel. The next highest, 17. Out of 13 personnel running attempts, 84 run attempts, the second highest, 45. So they're living in 13 personnel. Now, injuries to wide receivers, I get it. They have shuffled guys in and out. Jarvis has been hurt. Odell missed the beginning portions of the year. DPJ in and out. The reasoning is obvious. But if you're looking for like a lack of explosive pass plays, I don't think you have to look much further than that. You know, you're not going to get a ton of downfield explosives when you're running a ton of 13 personnel. There are benefits to it. They do things pretty well, and they're actually pretty efficient throwing the ball when they're in 13 personnel. I actually think they're 34 of 48 passing attempts wise, all the way up 575 yards, significantly more than anybody else, and two touchdowns, no interceptions. So they're fine. It's just a thing that you got to talk about with, like, they're doing something that is wholly unique, and they were not doing anywhere near as much last year. Now, last year they did lead the NFL. I believe they ended up leading the NFL in 13 personnel. But last year, if you're looking at weeks 1 through 17, for the whole year they ran 143, and right now they're sitting at 137. So they are significantly higher. What they've cut down is their 12 personnel. You know, the 12 personnel stuff is 284 12 personnel snaps last year. And if you look at it this year, the 12 personnel number is down to 117, so they're not going to get close. They're actually 22nd in the NFL in 12 personnel and 28th in 11 personnel. So low numbers, and 13 personnel is really high, and it's unique across the board. In this game, Baker Mayfield had a couple great throws. He had a third down, 13 throw for 17 yards to Rashard Higgins, posted that clip. He had another great throw, which ended up with two big-time throws. One was that ball to Higgins. The other was a corner route to Jamarcus Bradley that I posted, which was a fantastic throw where he kind of manipulated the corner to get him to bite on the first layer of the concept, the medium. You know, it's probably a 10 to 15-yard out. And the corner he hit at about 45 yards on a line. Great throw. Great throw, and proves that the arm is still more than capable. The problem is he struggled against pressure, 1 of 6 for 3 yards when blitzed, 0 of 6 on the game when blitz period, had an interception against the blitz, which is a 25.2 grade, and then a 59.2 under pressure grade. When he was not blitzed, he was relatively fine, a 72.6, but a 48.0 clean. When he was untouched in the pocket, he had two interceptions, 173 yards, 14 of 23, and 15 of 29 on the day, 176, two interceptions and a touchdown. Again, we're back to the same thing with Mayfield. It's the lack of consistency, missing easy throws that NFL quarterbacks across the league are making, and then also coupling in those big-time throws where you're like, okay, that's a glimpse of who I think he could be, and that's why it gets really frustrating. I've gone on and on about the injuries, not going to do it again. Talked about it with Jordan Zerm last night if you want to hear my opinion. It's all very weird. There's precipitation on the ground in Cleveland in the game. I get that. That's how it's going to be in Cleveland, though. So if you're going to use that as a crutch, I think that's wrong, because this is Cleveland. This is the weather. You have to be able to perform. It's not a one-off. It's November, December, January, Cleveland, Ohio football weather. And, you know, that can't be a crutch. Now, the injuries, that's fine. I've talked about it, gone through it, given my opinion on it. Just not going to do it again. So the only other thing that's worth really talking about, as we kind of conclude the notes on Mayfield, is this information put out by Ian Harditz on Twitter, where he had noted that according to the Browns, according to the PFF metrics, have the single lowest catchable pass rate on targets to wide receivers deemed open or wide open. And that tells you quite a bit about the season and why the offense is off, why they're putting up fewer points, why the quarterback play is failing, and why you feel like the Browns can't score. They're missing the layup plays. They're missing the wide open throws. There were more of those misses again on Sunday. And if you're wondering, like, you know, you're frustrated about the Browns offense and you're picking certain things, well, you have to talk about how they're missing the wide open throws. That's something Mayfield has seemingly been pretty good at in his career. Okay, at least when, you know, granted he's been playing in his quality stretches, but that statistic, single statistic about this offense, which creates open throws to receivers, if they're open or wide open, they have the single lowest catchable pass rate on targets to those players. That's a problem, guys, and that's why the Browns' offense is stuck in motion and can't go anywhere. So I thought the line protected pretty well for the day. If we look at grades specific to pass protection, the pass blocking numbers, looks like here there were 33 dropbacks for the group. The only guy who struggled was Blake Hansen, but he only gave up two hurries, two pressures on the day, 42.4. Everybody else kept him clean except for one quarterback hit from Jedrick Wills, but 89.2 from Betonio, 72.8 from Teller, 86.0 from J.C. Treader, 79.8 from Jedrick Wills. So yeah, really good across the board. Wyatt Teller did have a lower grade on true pass sets, where he had a 61.9, but still really good pass blocking on the day. As far as receiving grades go, the group was led by Nick Chubb, who had a receiving grade of 72.4 and 17 pass snaps. Not wildly productive, but two catches for 14 yards. David Njoku went for 71.8 grade. He had two catches on four targets for 20 yards. Jamarcus Bradley, 46 yards. He went 2 for 2 on targets to catches. Thought he was fine. Nice job stepping in. Austin Hooper, 4 catches on 6 targets, 53 yards, one of his more productive days, but he did have a drop. And then Rashard Higgins had 1 catch on 4 targets for 17 yards. Jarvis Landry, 4 catches on 8 targets, 26 yards. But there were a lot of throws to Jarvis that were missed. The interception airmail, he missed him on a wide open basic route over the middle, and he missed him on a stem release post or a glance route that would have given Jarvis at least, I mean, I'm telling you, that there would have been really, really productive yards there that could have pushed him into the 80 to 90 territory where Mayfield just missed him. So I'm not going to blame Jarvis for that issue right there. So run blocking grades for this game, pretty solid all around, especially in the gap phase, which again, the Browns double up over 50% more gap blocking snaps, 76.5 for Teller, 65.6 for Betonio, Hants 82.7, 82.7 for Treader. And then the only guy who struggled in the run phase from a high volume snap percentage along the offensive line is Jedrick Wills, who was a 58.1, but even though he was still serviceable. So that's your offensive line grades there. Austin Hooper had a nice day in the blocking phase, 70.7 in run blocking grade in the gap schemes, 84.5 for Higgins when he was near, and Njoku 72.8. Again, the Browns are, you know, hit or miss in zone. The standouts were Teller. I thought Wyatt Teller was phenomenal, even though he had a couple penalties. He had one penalty in that phase, the run phase, that block in the back. Still had a nice game. Hance continues to run block well, a 75.6 in zone, and then Betonio with an 81.0. Nick Chubb, welcome back, 22 carries, a 130. Thought he was pretty dang good. His rushing grade in this one was a 79.9. He had 6 missed tackles forced. He had a whopping 7 10-plus yard carries. He ran 15 gap schemes to only 6 zone schemes. He's so fluid in terms of what scheme he can handle. Ran for a 130 and just a great game, in the game they needed him to be really good. 76 yards after contact for Nick in the game. Dearness Johnson also graded out well, an 82.3. He ran 5 times for 26 yards, made 3 missed tackles happen though, which is always nice, right? Turning 30 yards after contact, out rushing what the total was because you make somebody miss near the line of scrimmage. So thought Dearness played pretty well. Jarvis also had a 16-yard touchdown run. You know, exciting play, making something out of nothing on a busted trick play that the Lions seemed to feel out pretty good. You know, they took away all the options, and Jarvis just happened to find a seam and snuck his way up the middle to, you know, that's a winning play. Make a play, and he made a play when they needed somebody to make a play. So kudos to him. Overall, offensively, a lot of guys played well. They played well up front. They played well in the backfield at the running back position. Some of the wide receivers I thought played well. I thought tight end played well. But in this game, you know, some games you're the hero, some games you're the goat. And, you know, not the good goat. Baker Mayfield was the problem. He held them back. He missed too many opportunities, and they only scored 13 points, and the game became a game that they could actually lose, you know, if not for holding, you know, Detroit to a field goal to make it 13-10. If they score a touchdown there when Baker turned it over in his own territory on an errant high throw that gets tipped, then, you know, the Lions could have scored there to make it 14-13, and who knows if the Browns ever put themselves in position again. So they overcame it. They overcame the poor quarterback play. You can have your opinion on his walking off, skipping the media stuff. I don't like it, but have your opinion on it. But they got to get better quarterback play, and I don't think that's in any way a secret. Whether you're a big, huge Baker supporter or not, whoever they're playing, if it's Baker continued, they have to get better play from him or they're never going to go anywhere, and it's going to be a tough, tough last half of the season. So hopefully that quarterback play turns around. That's all for your offensive breakdown. We will have some information on that 13 personnel stuff coming tomorrow, but that's it. If you have any questions, fire them over in the Ask the Insider section at the OBR. We'll be more than happy to answer them. We're going to now go over to our interview with Cameron Justice. She's a beat writer for the Cleveland Browns, does a great job. She is one of the best doing it. And we talk about a ton of different things, media coverage in Cleveland and angles about why fans feel the way they do about it. Talk about the offense, too. I really wanted to get her opinion on Baker, her opinion on some of the decisions surrounding playing him, and then the differences in what this offense looks like, where it can go, whether it can get better, and then kind of lastly talking about some of the more important questions looming over the second half of the year for this group. So let's get over to our interview with Cameron right now.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Okay, welcoming in Cameron Justice. Cameron, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm well. I can't really complain all too much. I could try, you know, but I'm not allowed to be grumpy about many things, according to those who, you know, pay attention to the Browns. They won, right? They won, which is great.
They did win.
But there's some drama floating. I'll start. I have a bevy of questions for you. I will start with, I like having somebody around the team, close to the team, asking questions, because I think you can get a temperature that not many people can when they just hop online and read, you know, read tweets, secondhand tweets, all that stuff. So where is, I'll start general. You've covered this team different years. Is there a feeling of like true toxicity going on, or do you think it's just maybe a little bit, I guess, amplified by what social media can do sometimes? Or do you think that there's some hostility going on between different, because, you know, that last week it was the coaches were getting kind of called out by the players. Then there's some things going on about why certain players are playing maybe they shouldn't be. I guess I'm just gauging amongst what you've seen. Are you concerned about the chemistry of the team, that sort of stuff?
You know, I'm not. And it's, I will say, I think things are, like you said, amplified online. I think it's very easy to take a quote or two or take a segment and kind of run away with it in your mind of, you know, what they're talking about, read into it a little bit too much. Mm-hmm. Now, with that being said, I don't think it's perfect right now. I do think there are a little bit of messiness. There's a little bit of messiness going on within the team and the organization. Nowhere near what we've seen in the past, of course. And nothing that's out of control and out of the realm of, you know, an easy fix. And they say it all day long that, you know, winning solves everything. I don't think that necessarily rang true on Sunday against the Lions, because that wasn't the win that they should have had. Maybe not, it didn't look the way that it probably should have. And I think that was very frustrating. But I think that's what it is more so than anything, is frustration. I think a lot of players are frustrated with their own performances, with their performances as in units, different positions are, you know, are frustrated with their performance across the board, and trying to motivate each other to be better. And sometimes it plays out, and then you get those games like the Bengals game where everything is firing on all cylinders and it looks great, and then you follow that up with the game against the Patriots and everything looked horrible and everything fell apart. And I think that just having so many different looks this season, so many different performances across the board and across the roster, like good, bad, mediocre, it's hard to pinpoint where this team is. And there's so many different areas in which they have to grow. I think that is a frustrating thing for them. And I think that's kind of those vibes that you're getting, frustrated with themselves and frustrated, I think, a little bit with each other. And you've seen players like, call coaches out, like you said, and even call some players out about stepping up and executing and being better. Myles Garrett is a very vocal leader, and he's not afraid, and he doesn't shy away from saying, you know what, we're putting pressure on, we got to step up, we got to execute, we need guys to make plays behind us. If we're putting pressure on, you got to do your coverage. And I think sometimes when you hear that, it sounds like the locker room is lost and all that. And I think it's really because last year we saw with Kevin Stefanski, everything was very closed up, buttoned up, tight lip, no leaks, no drama, just, and it helped that they did really well towards the end, like at the end of the season, of course, but everything was very buttoned up, and you're getting a little bit more, you know, feedback from players during press conferences and on social media, and you're seeing more than you saw last year. And it feels like maybe the team is like losing that sense of keep things in house in the sense that they had last year. That was like so much different from Browns of the past, but I don't think that it's to the point where, you know, it's the locker room is lost or, you know, it's so toxic and this can't ever come back. But I do think that there are decisions that are being made and that have been made, and that maybe not everybody on the team is necessarily on board with. Mm-hmm. But I think that in that sense, that they might not be on board and they might show a little bit of frustration here or there. But overall, I think when it comes to the, you know, the brotherhood that they've said that they've had, I don't think that is lost. I think sometimes their frustration just outweighs things and they feel compelled almost to talk about it, and we didn't see that last year. And so it seems like dysfunction, but I think they do a really good job after to kind of get back on track and try to make sure that the toxicity doesn't spread, you know, to a point where it's not fixable anymore.
I think to your point kind of about the social media craze, I know this is a little off topic, but like, I mean, to me, it's interesting. There's a level of hate for the Browns beat coverage, and I just want to get your opinion on it. I don't know. It doesn't come from everybody. I think there are a lot of really level-minded people who understand, like, the job description here and what you guys are supposed to do and how it goes. But, like, there was a quote early in the year, like Malik Jackson is a good example. I think he had said to you, you had asked a question about what the young guys need to do to be ready. I think, I don't know if you recall this quote, but it was like, what do the young guys need to do to be ready? And the quote was kind of built around eat, sleep, and breathe football. And if you're not doing that, then you're wrong. And people saw the answer and thought that he was calling somebody out specific when you're asking a general question. That's why it can get really dangerous with these quotes. That's kind of why I wanted to ask you the opening question. But I mean, like, what, like, as you've started to really pivot to doing this all the time and covering them as a beat writer, where do you think the hatred comes from, or the I don't know if it's hatred, but it's just constant complaining about the media coverage? And to me, it's like, what do you want people to ask? I guess it's like, how do you deal with it? And do you notice that it's uncomfortable at times trying to, like, report what is being done around the, like, I don't know how to frame this question. It's a sensitive question. Like, people think that you guys, and I'm saying you guys because I'm not a beat writer. I mean, I'm not, Fred Greetham covers them for, like, they think there's drumming up the controversy or whatever. And that's not the goal of what you guys are doing. Just asking relevant questions. You're going to ask every question angle possible. Like, I'm just kind of curious, is it overwhelming at times? And why do you think it is that way?
I mean, it definitely is overwhelming, especially, you know, I mean, and let me start off by saying, I understand criticism and I take criticism all day long. Like, I like the feedback. I like to hear, you know, oh, I want this, I don't like this. Like, I think that helps anyone be better in anything they're doing is constructive feedback and taking that. And so, you know, if someone complaining about a question, if you don't like it, I can't stop you. I can't make that. I can't stop you from that being your opinion. I can use that in a way to help me better the way I ask questions. And that's, for me, always a goal. I always want to be better. Why wouldn't I? And I think, I mean, most people are that way. But yeah, I mean, there is this strange hatred for Cleveland media, and honestly, as much as I say hatred for Cleveland media, just media as a whole. And I think overall, the reason that it's so easy for people to be upset about the media is not, I mean, this is not to take away anyone's opinion of something being bad or not liking anyone, because you can't make people like you. And for every person that likes you, there's going to be one that doesn't. So I do think, though, that it's very easy to, when something isn't going right or you don't like to see something, I think it's very easy to blame the media, because they're not fans of the media. There's not a fan base for Cleveland media. There is a fan base for the Cleveland Browns, and the Cleveland Browns fans want to be fans of the team. And who wants anything negative? Nobody wants to see anything negative. And so rather than be mad at a player that you're cheering for, a team that you're cheering for, I think it's easier to be mad about how something is framed, about the answer. And so if you don't like the answer, then it's easy to blame the media for asking the question at all, which, I mean, is not fair, because those same questions, if they answered it differently and, you know, someone looking at that answer liked it, they would praise you for asking that question. And I think it's a lot easier said than done, is to ask the perfect question every day, all the time. And, like, I mean, yeah, sometimes questions are not asked well. I myself have, you know, I stumble over questions sometimes, and, you know, I kick myself afterwards, like, oh, I could have asked that so much better. So no, not everything is perfect. It's just like everything. I mean, everyone who has a job probably is not perfect every single day that they are at their job. A mistake happens here, something they could have done better there, a way they could have approached something differently. That's just part of it. But I do think what you were saying, I think there is this hatred, and it's
It's uncomfortable. It's uncomfortable at times.
It really is. And for me, I think most recently, what I saw of that, you know, I got drug on social media, and it's okay. I mean, it's fine. I live with it. I never want to see it. Don't love negative flooding in my mentions, but with the Jarvis Landry answer about not getting the ball a lot, it was a valid question. And I think what people also don't understand is how media works. I think that people think that there's just this like unlimited, unfiltered, unbridled access to everything, which is not the case. You know, the Jarvis Landry thing in particular, he was asked about, you know, his involvement in the offense. He wasn't getting the ball a lot. And actually he was asked about his injury and how that was playing out for him, that knee injury, and if it was limiting him. And he offered up the answer, you know, I'm not getting the ball a lot either. So that's probably also why I don't have a lot of production. And then follow-up questions were asked. And I know a lot of people didn't like the setting in which it was asked because it was at his Thanksgiving food drive. I didn't ask the question, but it was a valid question. And I posted the answer, and I got drugged because why would anyone ask this at this event? Well, I mean, yeah, I see both sides of it. But you also, I think one of the reasons why media gets so much hate is that there's this lack of understanding about how things work. Jarvis Landry was not made available to speak with. He wasn't spoken to by media mm-hmm. before that event. There was about almost 2 weeks without hearing from Jarvis Landry. And there was a lot of things to talk to Jarvis Landry about, and a lot of things that, you know, people wanted to know. Fans wanted to hear. These are questions that are being asked by fans. You know, why is Jarvis Landry not in the mix? Is Jarvis Landry going to be hurt by the Odell Beckham Jr. news? These are questions that fans want to hear. And I understand, you know, when you hear an answer and you're not totally in love with how it sounds and maybe how they came off in the answer, I think it's easy to be mad and, you know, target something. Like, why would you even ask this now? But if that wasn't asked now, we don't know when Jarvis Landry will be made available. So I think these are valid questions. And I think a lot of this hate is just a lack of understanding of, and not by any fault of their own. It's just you have this perception of how things work, and it isn't always the case. I'm learning a lot of how things work. Even you and me, I've been doing this for a couple of years, and still things are how the processes work and how, you know, how it works to be in journalism works as a whole. I think it's a learning process, and it's a lot easier to see that when you're doing it. But you know, before I was doing this, I mean, I'll admit I had no idea how some of this worked. And I think that's kind of what fuels it too, is, you know, you have all these expectations of, oh, why don't you just do this? Why wouldn't you ask him that? Why don't you like pull him one-on-one? And that's just like not how it works anymore or at all. And I think that fuels it too. But
yeah, you have to ask the team to give you access to a player one-on-one, which isn't always guaranteed. You don't get the best players all the time. So if like you request Jarvis, you're likely not going to get him for any of those big name guys. You can get some of the smaller name guys. This was my exposure to it. And then like you, I think people think that like local beat coverage, people have like their numbers and can text them and call. I don't know if you guys have noticed this, but the only people that these guys give scoops to are the national people. It's just like the way it works anymore. And I'm not talking about just for Cleveland. It's everywhere. It's very rare that people just have, you could get Jarvis Landry for 5 to 10 minutes the entire month of November, right? Like, it's crazy to think that, like, so if there's an event like this there where Jarvis is, you know, the team's not around him, he can just openly answer my questions, of course you're going to go and ask some questions about how he feels about his best friend being traded, how his emotions are about the team this year. Like, I think you're spot on when you say people have a misconception about how much access the coverage gets on a daily basis, period. And that leads to a lot of unnecessary hatred. It leads to a lot of unnecessary take your anger out on the Brown season on me type of stuff. And it's uncomfortable. So I really wanted to get your opinion on it because, I don't know, if we shed light on it, maybe it'll change the way people look at it, the way people think about it, and give a second chance, or not a second chance, but a second thought before firing off that grumpy tweet. You know, like, you guys are trying. You're trying, and it's not easy. It's not easy. You don't get the access you used to all those years ago, where, you know, you didn't have the number, a cell phone number of a national media. Everything that was newsworthy came from, like, you know, the people around the team who visited the locker room and talked to these guys and had one-on-one time with them. And it's just so different than it used to be, you know, when you covered the 80s or the 90s Browns. It's just, I think people miss that. And I wanted to touch on it. But let's transition a little bit here to what's going on with Baker. So it's pretty obvious to me that he wants to play, and although there are times where he's hurting the group more than helping, it is, let me frame it this way. I want you to answer it openly. Who do you think is making the decision that Baker's going to play regardless? Because Kevin Stefanski catches a lot of the blame for him playing, almost like he's like putting him out in the gladiator arena and saying, hey man, you got no choice, you're going to go play. It seems like it's a decision from a lot of people, partially led by Baker. And I'm just sort of curious if you sense that there's dissension around whether he should be playing or not from those who are covering, or, you know, at least the important figures in the Browns.
Yeah, I do. I think it is. It's more than one person making this decision. I don't think, you know, Baker Mayfield is out there like, I don't want to play. And Kevin Stefanski's like, you know, good luck anyway. You're doing it anyway. I don't think that's the case. I think Baker Mayfield wants to play. He wants to show his toughness, and he is a tough guy. You saw against the Bengals, it's not like he wasn't banged up in that game. He still had that shoulder injury going through the foot thing. The knee injury is new to the base of the past. So that was the Patriots game. So that's new. And then you saw how that affected him through that game and into this Sunday game against the Lions. But, you know, he showed that he can still perform with that shoulder injury, with, you know, his body banged up. He can make some of those passes that we know him to make. He can sling the ball. We saw that huge pass to Donovan Peoples-Jones that, you know, he still has, his arm is functioning, and it can, he can be accurate. He can put the ball in the window that he needs to. He can get there. But when these injuries continue to pile up, that was the turning point, I think, that game against the Bengals. It was like the turning point where I'm like, okay, well, he's getting more comfortable with that shoulder brace on there. It's starting to heal up a little bit. And he's probably, I mean, it probably doesn't feel great, but it's also not only with that shoulder, it's not only just about the pain that it's causing him. It was about getting used to the shoulder harness and the brace that he's wearing, because that will change your mechanics. It's going to change how your body is able to move, and in turn will change the way you throw the ball and the way that you're able to, you know, move around. So I think that was a learning curve, and I think he started to get on track, and then, you know, the injuries pile up, and now he's got the heel injury and he's got a knee injury, and these things are now, you know, taking parts of his game away in other ways. First, the shoulder limited the way that left arm was able to move up, and, you know, maybe how his body was able to extend in his throws. Mm-hmm. And he, you know, he pulled through that and got used to that harness and was showed that he can still throw. But now you've got that knee injury, and that limits the way that he's able to move around and his mobility and, you know, how he's looking in the pocket. When he's stuck in the pocket, that's not the Baker Mayfield that you want to see. That's not what's going to get it done. And we saw that against the Lions. He needs that mobility. He needs to be able to roll out, and that's when he plays his best. And so I think that knee injury, it was, you know, a week old, but not doing great. It didn't feel great. He talked about it all week that this is the most banged up he's ever been, probably in his career. And, you know, he was toughing it out, and that's the word, toughing it out. You know, it's causing him discomfort. And even on Sunday against the Lions, you would see him after a play just kind of hobbling around out there, limping around, looking really stiff and just really uncomfortable. He looked like he was in a lot of pain. And so I think he's trying to prove that he's tough enough to get past it, and he's trying to fight to the bye week. He's been trying to fight to the bye week really since week six against the Cardinals, when he took that hit and, you know, exaggerated the shoulder injury he had in week two. I think that's kind of been like the goal is bye week, just to get some rest. And so I think that he's putting himself out there as like, he's never going to say no. I mean, unless it got horrifically bad. I can never picture Baker Mayfield with the kind of person and the kind of quarterback he is telling Kevin Stefanski, no, can't do it, won't do it. So I think he's making himself available. Like, yeah, I can tough it out. I'm good. And then they're talking to the medical staff, and the medical staff is saying, you know, like, I mean, he doesn't need to be out. I mean, he can play. Now, I don't know if they're telling them that he should play. I don't know that everyone in that organization is saying, you know, he should play, just that he can. And I think that's when it comes to Kevin Stefanski as the final decision maker. And, well, if he can play, he will play. And we see that with multiple players dealing with injuries. If you can play, you probably will play. Maybe it's limited snaps. It doesn't work that way for Baker Mayfield in their quarterback situation. And Kevin Stefanski even said he didn't really consider Case Keenum coming in Sunday, even though he was warming up on the sideline, which I think is something I would have liked him to consider, honestly, with the way that Baker Mayfield looked out there, just not even performance-wise, just comfort-wise, just the level of pain he looked like he was in. I would have liked for Kevin Stefanski to have maybe thought about, oh, maybe Baker Mayfield should rest, especially in a game against the Detroit Lions. I think that was the opportunity of a lifetime for you to get your quarterback a little extra rest. But they didn't go with it. They didn't do it. And I think Kevin Stefanski is making the final decision. I think a lot of the decision is the medical staff that is telling them he can play. I don't know what their opinions are, but just medical-wise, you know, a bruised knee, he can play through that. A bruised foot, and he can play through that. Non-throwing shoulder, he can play through it. Now, they're all stacking up, and he can play through it. Should he play through it? I don't think that should have been the case on Sunday. It happened. Now, it's very tough to say that he's not going to play this Sunday against the Ravens. That's a huge game. Competition level much higher than the Lions. Do you want to put Case Keenum in there over Baker Mayfield? If you didn't think that Case Keenum was better to be in that situation than Baker Mayfield, as banged up as he was against the Lions, I don't think that you make that decision against the Ravens, which is unfortunate for Baker Mayfield, but he is toughing it out and he's ready to play on Sunday. He said he's ready to play on Sunday against the Ravens. So he said he expects to be better, better than he has been in weeks, and progress with that, like with those injuries, feel better than he has in weeks. So I guess we'll see. But I think it's a lot of areas and a lot of people making those decisions, and it ultimately comes down to Kevin Stefanski. But he's not the only one making this decision. I think Baker Mayfield wants to play. Medical staff is clearing him. And it's just, you know, it's a strange situation to be in for the Browns. You look around the league, and other quarterbacks have some injuries, and, you know, they're on to their backup, like, right away. Just bench him, try to heal up. And it's not the case here in Cleveland. But, I mean, if Kevin Stefanski's confident in Baker Mayfield going out there, no matter how banged up he is, that ultimately does come down to him and as the final say.
Okay. So you think it's Kevin's final say, which is fine. I mean, I just have been curious about it. I mean, especially when he said it's an organizational decision, it feels like there's a lot of hands in the middle of that pot of, you know, that decision. I'm trying to find an answer on it too, because, you know, we're all watching it and he's struggling, and you watch how the Cardinals are handling Kyler Murray and immediately not forcing that, you know, that guy to get out there and play and giving him a chance to rest up. So, you know, it's also different situations. They're playing a lot better football. Their record's better. They're safer. So I'm trying to give fans as many perspectives about this thing as possible, and it's a strange thing. So let me ask you this. Do you think the rest of the year, collectively, offensively, they figure this thing out? They're in a rut. They've not scored many points. You know, they've gone, if you take out the Bengals game, it's been a lot of struggle. You know, and the Bengals game went well, which is great. You know, I'm always kind of that guy who hates, if you remove the good, look at all the bad. But but other than that game, it has been a struggle. And, you know, I'm kind of curious if you think the rest of the way they have enough to make a playoff push here, or do you think ultimately it'll end up just being, they just don't end up clicking enough this year. They don't have enough firepower. Their health hasn't been good enough that they don't just, you know, between Baker's injuries and everything else, there's just not enough there.
I don't know that they're going to go, you know, lights out, 100% figured it out, here it is. I do think that they have enough ability to make things click. I think a lot of right now is you can't, eliminate, and I know everyone hates, you know, blaming injuries, but it's not just Baker Mayfield playing through injury. It's the kinds of players that have been out, who have been out with injury. Losing Nick Chubb and Demetric Felton, at the same time, you still have Kareem Hunt on IR, and you don't have Jack Conklin. He's on IR. And these are easy to forget as the weeks go on that, oh, he's not there, because they should be able to do the next man up thing and step up. And then sometimes the players look good while they're doing it. Like D'Ernest Johnson really stepped up in the absence of Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt against the Broncos. That was one of those things where it was like, you could blame injuries, but it's the next man up. You've got a roster full of other guys who are playing in the NFL for a reason. They have to step up. I don't know. I do think that injuries are something that should be looked at with how this offense is running. And when it comes to the run game, you get Nick Chubb back and you look how impactful he was against the Lions. That was a huge game. That was the identity of this Browns offense, is really establishing that run, right? And now you're hopeful that against the Ravens, you know, Kevin Stefanski said today that Kareem Hunt is expected to come back to practice this week. They're hopeful that he'll be able to play on Sunday against the Ravens. And so if you get him back and he's activated, you've got that 1-2 punch back with Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt. That can't be, you know, undervalued. You have to appreciate what that is for the offense and how that really impacts how defenses have to look at the Browns offense. And then not to mention the protection on the O-line and the run blocking that you get with the line as a full, healthy unit. You know, Blake Hantz stepping in. When it's his turn, he's a solid piece that can be plugged in. But I mean, he's no Jack Conklin. He's not there yet. That's not who he is. Jack Conklin is a huge piece of this line. And I think even when they're playing well, these plug and play pieces, you know, Blake Hantz fills in, James Hudson fills in. They can fill in and they can do their jobs in a way that the Browns are looking for them to do. But overall, how I see the offensive line is almost like a chain, and you know, they play their best when they're the one healthy unit, the starting unit that we know works well, with Jedrick Wills, Wyatt Teller, Joel Bitonio, Jack Conklin, and JC Treanor in the center. But when one of those guys goes out, they can plug it in. Is the chain as strong as it was with this new link? Maybe not, because yes, they practice together as starters, but that's not how practice. We all know that. Like, you know, the starters are going to get the most reps together. And then of course, you know, your backups will get some reps starting just to keep them fresh, but that's not what they're intended to do. That you can't spend the entire time practicing all together, because you have to practice with your starting group. And so I think there's that missing bit of chemistry and, you know, awareness of what, you know, what one person's going to do, playing off each other. And so getting them back, I think, will allow the Browns offense to start clicking a little bit better. They got the offensive line back healthy. Jack Conklin comes back this week, as he's expected to, and you can work that unit as a whole. Baker Mayfield might feel a little bit more comfortable back there and not maybe be concerned about getting hit. You can see you can almost see that level of frustration he has, you know, in the style of play that he's putting out there, being, not, I don't want to say afraid, because I don't think that he's afraid, but aware that he might get hit. There could be contact, and not wanting any more injuries than he already is dealing with, and he's already banged up. So I think that would provide a level of comfortability to him and a sense of, you know, added protection to make him feel more confident back there. And then you know, that 1-2 punch with Kareem Hunt coming back. And then I think at the same time with this, the Browns offense running, you know, using 13 personnel so much and really utilizing these tight ends, I think, and you probably know the numbers more than I do. You're really big on your film analysis, but I would say that's being used more than I've seen it with this team. And we know Kevin Stefanski loves his tight ends and tight end usage, but you know, that's been very prominent. I think the offense has been leaning on that, especially, you know, Odell Beckham Jr. is gone. The receivers aren't really looking like they're involved in much of the offense. I mean, they are, but not in the way that you would expect some wide receivers to be involved. And so I think that, you know, the team getting used to running with all these tight ends on the field and using them to the extent that they are. I think that you kind of have to figure that out. I think these players are figuring out, like, okay, maybe I'm not going to get the ball as much and might be a little frustrating at times. I think as the season goes on, Baker Mayfield gets healthy and, you know, these players return, I think you can mix that offense up a little bit, and they should, not that they will, that they should be able to mix that offense up a little bit more and get those receivers involved more. And, you know, maybe Baker Mayfield being a little healthier if he enters the bye and, you know, kind of feels a little bit better after that, is able to make some more deep passes and get more accurate with his ball, because he hasn't been his accurate self that we know him to. So that's another thing with it, you know, using deep threats, you know, you can do that all day, but if Baker Mayfield's not his most accurate, then do you go that route, or do you just, you know, stick with screens and you stick with your tight end usage? So I think that a lot of how the offense runs from this point on will be based off of the health of the team and based off of the way that this team rallies around kind of how Kevin Stefanski has decided is the best way to handle all of these different problems and issues health-wise and personnel-wise, how he's choosing to handle it. I think a lot of it will be come down to the how those players are reacting to that too. So it's a lot to take in and a lot to evaluate as like, is this going to get better? Can this get better? But I do think that ultimately they can. And I think that the players on this team have the mentality that, you know, as frustrating as things might be for them, I think they have the mentality that they'll get on board with it. They just have to, you know, really get on board with it and kind of stick it out and watch it fix itself almost and help in the long run fix it with their ability to get on board with what's going on.
Okay, cool. We'll close with this question. You give me your gut feeling here. One word, okay? Does Baker Mayfield make it to a second contract in Cleveland? One word, no explanation.
Yes.
Okay, fair enough. You heard it from her. Cameron Justice, thank you so much for joining us. Thank you for your insight. And remind everybody, if you can, Cameron, where you can be found.
Find me on all social at Cammy Justice, and then you can read my work at news5cleveland.com.
Thanks again, Cameron.
Thank you.
Big thanks to Cameron Justice for coming on tonight's show, giving us some responses to her insights, being close to the Cleveland Browns, what she thinks is going on. I think it's quite good to get as many perspectives on this thing as possible. There's a lot of moving parts. I'm not sure any one person knows what exactly is going on with some of the decision making, who's in charge of some of those decisions. So I do want to bring in many different people to sort of hash out how it could be coming to the point that it's coming to. So Cameron had great insights. Appreciate her time. Appreciate you guys for being supportive, listening to the pod, download subscriptions. You know, they mean the world to me. Always say it every time. They really do. They keep this thing moving along. We will have some episodes of Brownstown crossing over. Andre Knott does a great job. They're going to be crossing over into this feed before too long, because you should listen to that show if you have not already done so. So make sure you check that out. Everybody have a great Tuesday. Make sure you check out the OBR for all the latest Browns news, including the Newswire and much, much more throughout the day. Have a great Tuesday again, and we sign off with Go Browns!